At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
I'll tell you this one straight, the way it unfolded, because even after all these years of digging, burying, and sometimes unearthing, this one never left me. Most folks think a gravedigger's job is just about digging holes. But it's more than that. It's about respect, accuracy, and record-keeping. Every burial in the U.S. is logged, date, plot, name, witnesses. When a family lays someone to rest, there's paperwork, a burial permit, and signatures that follow that casket into the ground. So when a court orders an exhumation, it's not something we take lightly. Usually it's for legal reasons, insurance, foul play suspected, or family disputes over remains. My job is to open the earth carefully, keep the site respectful, and make sure what we bring up matches the records. This case came out of a small town cemetery, one of those places where families had been burying their own for generations. The woman had been buried in the early 1960s, according to the records. The order was clear: dig, exhume, and prepare for identification. I remember the morning. It was cool, damp, and quiet, the kind of morning where even the birds seemed to keep their distance. The grounds crew marked the grave, checked the records twice, and brought in the backhoe to take off the top layers of earth. After that, it's all handwork, shovels and spades, because you don't risk damaging the casket. We reached the vault, a concrete box meant to keep the casket sealed from the elements. The lid was intact, no cracks, no signs of tampering. We lifted it with the crane, and there it was, the casket. Now here's what you expect after decades underground. The casket usually shows wear. Even sealed ones collapse with time. Moisture, soil pressure, and decomposition do their work. Inside, you'd find remains, sometimes reduced to bones, maybe fragments of clothing or jewelry. Even in poor conditions, there's always something, but not this time. The casket was pristine. Too pristine, almost, like it had been sheltered all those years. We undid the clasps and lifted the lid, careful not to disturb the integrity of what should have been there. And then nothing, not a bone, not a scrap of clothing, not even soil leakage inside. It was completely empty. Everyone froze. The court officer looked at me, then at the paperwork, as if maybe we had the wrong grave. We checked. The headstone matched. The burial register confirmed the plot. There were even witnesses listed from the original funeral. Her children, neighbors, the pastor. This was supposed to be her final resting place, yet the box was empty as if no one had ever been placed inside. We didn't say much at first. In this line of work, you learn not to jump to conclusions, but silence has its own weight, and I felt it pressing down heavier than the soil we'd removed. One of the younger guys muttered under his breath, asking if maybe there'd been a mistake, that perhaps she'd been buried elsewhere. But the records were airtight. The officer had us stop everything. Photographs were taken. The casket was measured, inspected. No hidden compartments, no signs of tampering, just a box that had never held what it was supposed to. I've exhumed bodies that were little more than dust. I've found bone fragments scattered when caskets broke down, but never before or since have I opened a burial that was entirely impossibly empty. The family was notified. I never heard what explanations were offered in court, whether they thought it was an error in the 1960s paperwork or something more. My part ended that day, but the memory didn't. Because here's the thing. Cemeteries are about closure. Every marker, every casket, every plot is a promise that the person is there, accounted for, at rest. When you break that promise, even once, you can't shake it. And for me, every time I walk past that section of the cemetery, I think about her name etched on stone, the date of burial carved for all to see, and the casket below, empty, silent, holding nothing at all. Hello, friends. Thank you for watching. A special shout out to our subscribers. You keep these eerie stories alive. But here's the thing, only 30% of viewers are subscribed. If you enjoy our content, hitting subscribe helps us more than you know. It takes a second, but makes a huge difference. While you're at it, like and share to keep the chills coming. Thanks again. You made this possible. See you in the next one, if you dare. I've been at this job long enough to know that when you open the earth, you open history too. Cemeteries aren't just rows of stones, they're layers of stories, sealed in wood and soil. Some are ordinary, expected, part of the cycle we all accept. Others, they're not so simple. This one stays with me because it wasn't just about what we found, it was about what it said. Exhumations aren't glamorous. They're scheduled like any other job, and we show up early, tools ready, coffee barely cooling in the truck before we're at it. This case came from an older section of the cemetery, where the stones leaned with age and the inscriptions were worn thin by rain and decades. The family line that owned the plot had all but disappeared. The request came from the courts, tied up in some estate matter, though we're never given the full story. The crew knew the drill: mark off the grave, roll the backhoe into place, start shaving off layers of earth, clay, rock and roots. It's always heavier in the older sections. The soil has settled, pressed down by decades, and it fights back against every cut of the shovel. We don't talk much when we dig. A few words, maybe a muttered complaint about the ground being stubborn. But mostly it's quiet work. There's a strange reverence to it. After hours of work, the shovel blade hits something solid, the telltale scrape of concrete. That's the burial vault. Older ones were often poured in place or assembled from slabs. This one had fractured with time, but it was still intact enough to do its job. We brushed off the surface, called the officer over to verify the plot number against the map. Everything matched. No mistakes. This was the right grave. The vault lid came up slow with the crane, soil sliding off its edges. Inside was the coffin, darkened with age but surprisingly intact. We rigged it with straps and pulled it to the surface, laying it down gently on timbers. That's when the air shifted. We pried open the clasps, metal corroded but still functional, and eased the lid back. You get used to certain sights: collapsed wood, scattered bone, maybe clothing fibers or a rosary tangled in decay. But what met us wasn't the remains, not at first. It was the inside of the lid itself. Scratches. Not faint, not mistaken for cracks in the wood. These were gouges, long, furious, uneven, the kind that come from fingernails or bone scraping against wood, over and over. You could almost see the rhythm of panic in them, clustered in desperate arcs. And then the remains. The skeleton was contorted. The arms weren't folded neatly as you'd expect from a funeral home placement. They were bent upward, elbows locked, fingers clawing toward the lid. The rib cage was twisted, the jaw askew, as if the final moments had been spent thrashing in the dark. I've seen collapse. I've seen what water does, what pressure does. This was neither. This was struggle. No one spoke. Normally there's at least one guy who cracks a grim joke. Gallows humor is how you get through the work. But not this time. We all just stood there staring. Even the court officer, a man used to crime scenes, had nothing to say. His photographer clicked quietly, the flash catching every gouge, every shadow in the wood. One of the younger guys on the crew shifted his boots and finally muttered, "They were alive." Nobody corrected him, because we all saw the same thing. People today forget that premature burial was once a real fear. Medicine in the 1800s and early 1900s wasn't always sharp. Conditions like epilepsy, cholera, and certain comas fooled doctors. If breathing slowed or pulse was faint, it wasn't uncommon for someone to be declared dead when they weren't. That's why safety coffins existed. Some had bells attached by string to the body's hand, so if the person woke, they could ring for help. Others had ventilation tubes, flags, even glass viewports. Most of it was novelty, things the wealthy could afford. Common folk didn't get that kind of insurance. They got a box, the dirt and faith that the doctor had been right. Looking at that coffin, I knew this one hadn't been given a safety net. She woke up in the ground, she fought until her body gave out. That day left a mark on me, because it wasn't just bones, it was a human story caught mid-scream, frozen in wood and bone. It stripped away the comfort people want from cemeteries, the belief that every grave is peaceful, that every person inside went quietly. Here was proof that sometimes death wasn't gentle, sometimes the grave itself was the struggle. After the documentation was done, we closed the coffin again, lowered it back down, sealed the vault. The earth covered it over once more, as though nothing had happened. The stone stood above it, silent, weathered, telling none of the truth it marked. Every job since, I carry that image. The lid, the scratches, the bent arms reaching upward. When I walk through older cemeteries, I wonder how many others lie underfoot, trapped in the same cruel twist of fate. How many final moments went unheard, buried in silence. Being a gravedigger teaches you to respect the dead. But that day, it also taught me to fear the mistakes of the living. Because the hardest truth of all is this: sometimes, a coffin doesn't hold rest. It holds a fight that nobody ever knew was happening. Most days, digging is just digging. The work is hard, the soil fights you, and the hours drag, but it's all routine. You learn the rhythms of a cemetery, the way the older grounds settle, how roots twist through the soil, how the clay changes color with depth. You come to expect what you'll find. But sometimes the ground gives you something you can't explain. This was one of those times.
Wayfair's Labor Day clearance is here. Right now, score up to 70% off everything home, plus fast shipping on everything right to your door. Shop now through September 2nd at wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Save big money right now at Menards. From smoke and carbon monoxide detectors to fire extinguishers and more, Kidde Home Safety products keep your family protected in case of emergencies. Smoke and carbon monoxide detectors are perfect for your living spaces, offering protection and peace of mind. Save big money on all Kidde products at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Every exhumation starts with paperwork. Burial permits, maps, plot records, names, dates. Everything has to line up legally before a spade touches soil. Families expect it. The courts demand it. And for us, it's the backbone of the job. That morning, we were working in a cemetery that had been active since the late 1800s. Old stones leaned at odd angles, weather-worn angels kept silent watch, and the grass in some spots grew in patchy tufts, fighting through clay-packed soil. The case was a court order, relocation of remains tied up in family disputes. We don't ask questions, we just follow orders, because the dead can't argue for themselves, and the living always find ways to do it for them. We brought in the backhoe, stripped away the topsoil, then switched to hand shovels once we reached the compacted layer above the vault. Sweat, mud, silence. That's the atmosphere. Every man on the crew knows the importance of steady hands at this stage. One wrong move with steel and you can puncture a coffin that should stay intact until the lid is properly opened. When the vault came into view, it looked ordinary, concrete, cracked with age, but intact. We lifted the lid with the straps and chain, set it aside. That's when I noticed it. The coffin inside wasn't its usual faded brown or black. The wood had turned a deep, unnatural shade of blue. At first I thought it was rot, the way wood sometimes darkens when water seeps in for decades. But this wasn't black, and it wasn't the grayish tone of decay. It was blue, like it had been soaked in dye. The color was strongest on the lid, almost uniform, as if painted. But it wasn't paint. You could see the grain beneath it, stained through. The soil around it looked normal. No clay staining, no mineral deposits leaching strange colors into the wood. Just a coffin that looked as though it had been lowered into a vat of ink. We pried it open carefully, with the officer and witnesses standing close. Inside, the remains were still present. But what struck me wasn't decomposition, it was discoloration. The bones and what little tissue remained had the same bluish tint. Not the green-brown you see with standard decomposition. Not the black staining from moisture. This was chemical, almost metallic in tone. Like copper or cobalt had leached through the body. The clothing fragments clung to the frame, faded but carrying the same stain. Even the interior lining of the coffin had bled with it. The men with me didn't speak for a long while. When something defies the pattern you know by heart, it unsettles everyone. Normally we'd mutter something, water damage, soil rot, time did its work. But this time there wasn't an easy explanation. The officer had his photographer document everything. The flash bounced off the strange hue, and for a second it looked almost deliberate, as if someone had meant for it to be that way. But the records showed otherwise. This was a standard burial, nothing unusual about it. I've worked enough exhumations to know that chemistry leaves fingerprints on the dead. Soil composition, embalming fluids, metals from casket hardware, they all leave their mark. Copper, for example, can turn surrounding materials blue or green when it oxidizes. Arsenic-based embalming fluids, used heavily in the 19th and early 20th centuries, could create strange discolorations that linger for decades. But here's the thing, the vault had been sealed, the soil around it showed no seepage, and the coffin's entire structure was saturated, not just patches near metal fixtures. Whatever had happened had soaked the wood and body evenly, like a dye bath, yet the surrounding ground was untouched. That was the part that didn't fit. Standing there, staring at that blue coffin, I felt the same silence settle over the crew that comes when you realize you're seeing something you can't box neatly into normal. No jokes, no mutters, just quiet. For the family, it would be a technical matter, remains relocated, reburied, records updated. For us, though, it was another reminder of how the dead never fully give up their mysteries. Every coffin holds a story, But some stories aren't written in stone or paper. Some are etched in wood and bone, in colors the earth itself shouldn't have left behind. I've opened coffins full of dust, coffins where collapse left nothing but fragments, coffins that smelled of mold and copper and earth. But the blue coffin, that one never left me. Because it looked deliberate, even though logic said it wasn't. It looked like a secret carried under the soil, one that the dead took with them, leaving only the stain behind as proof that something chemical, environmental, or maybe just time itself didn't follow the rules. And for me, every time I think back on it, I don't just remember the color, I remember the quiet. A crew of hardened men, shovels in hand, left speechless by a shade of blue that had no business being there. That's the kind of thing a gravedigger carries. Not fear, not superstition, but the heavy truth that sometimes the ground returns what it should not. Most exhumations follow a rhythm. You show up, check the paperwork, measure the plot against the records, and start digging. There's a process to it that never changes. You strip the topsoil with the backhoe, then switch to handwork so you don't damage the vault. Every motion has its place. We don't rush. We don't cut corners. It's not just about doing it right, it's about respect. That day, we were working an older section of the cemetery, mid-20th century burials. The grass was thin, the stones leaned a little, and the soil was packed hard with years of rain pressing it down. The order was simple: exhume, confirm remains, and prepare for relocation. Nothing unusual. But the ground doesn't always give back what you expect. The vault looked worn but stable. We cracked it open with the crane and chains, then lowered the straps to pull the coffin out. It wasn't in terrible shape, just the kind of decay you expect from decades underground. Wood softened, hinges rusted. We set it on timbers, brushed the soil away, and began prying the lid. That smell rose up, the mixture of damp earth, rot, and old embalming chemicals that you never quite get used to. Inside, the body was still there, reduced but recognizable in skeletal form, clothing fibers clinging to bone. That part was routine. What wasn't routine was what we saw when one of the lining seams pulled loose. Tucked under the silk lining, folded and stacked tight, were dozens of envelopes. At first I thought it might be old burial paperwork. Funeral homes sometimes leave receipts or memorial cards. But when we pulled them out carefully, it was clear these were letters, not just one or two. Dozens, some yellowed with age, some still crisp, all sealed. No names, no addresses, no stamps, just words written on the front of each. I'm sorry, forgive me, for what I never said, and some with nothing at all. We didn't open them, that wasn't our place. But even without reading, you could feel what they were. Love notes, confessions, apologies meant for someone who would never read them. The crew froze. Grave work hardens you in some ways. You get used to the smell, the decay, the weight of bones in your hands. But there are moments that cut through all that. This was one. The officer overseeing the job had his photographer document the find. Each letter was laid out, photographed, bagged for record. His gloves trembled a little as he lifted them. Mine did too, because in that moment we weren't looking at evidence or artifacts. We were looking at a man's private life, buried secrets sealed tight with him. The family, when told, had no idea. They were stunned, shocked. Some cried. Others were angry, demanding answers none of us could give. Why would he carry those letters into the ground? Who were they meant for? Why keep them sealed, hidden where no one could find them? We couldn't answer. I've opened caskets that held rosaries, wedding bands, family photos, tokens of love or faith, things you expect to find. But this was different. These weren't keepsakes. These were unfinished business. Words written but never spoken, carried into the earth as though death was the only safe place for them. And that stays with you, because it reminds you that the dead don't always rest cleanly. They carry weight, same as the living. Regrets, apologies, secrets too heavy for daylight. As a gravedigger, I deal in earth, stone, and silence. But every so often, the ground gives me a voice that doesn't speak out loud but tells me enough to know that even in death we are complicated, unfinished. After the letters were cataloged, the coffin was resealed. The remains were moved to their new resting place. The letters went wherever the courts decided. My job ended that day, but my thoughts didn't. Because I kept wondering, were those letters written to a wife who never forgave him, to children who never knew him fully, to someone he loved but couldn't have, or were they to himself, a way of leaving behind truths he could never face in life? I'll never know. None of us will. But every time I dig now, I think of that man, not because of how he looked in death, but because of the words he left behind, sealed in silence. and I wonder how many others lie beneath the soil, holding secrets no one ever knew, carried away in the dark where only a shovel, decades later, might ever uncover them. That's what it means to be a gravedigger. You don't just move earth. You move stories, confessions, and unfinished pieces of lives. And sometimes what you find haunts you not because it's frightening, but because it's too human to forget. Exhumations don't happen without reason. In America, it's usually tied to court orders, family disputes, relocations when cemeteries are moved, or sometimes identification for unresolved legal matters. Everything begins with paperwork, plot maps, permits, and confirmation of next of kin. Nothing starts until it's signed and checked, because disturbing a grave without cause is not just unethical, it's illegal. That morning was no different. We had the court's order, the family signatures, and the cemetery records in hand. The burial dated back several decades, mid-20th century. The family wanted her moved to a newer cemetery closer to where most of them live now. Simple on paper. Just another day's work for us. We arrived early, as we always do. The grounds were quiet, rows of headstones standing in the dawn light, the hum of the backhoe idling low, coffee still warming our hands. There's a stillness in cemeteries before work begins. A kind of weight that you carry, whether you speak of it or not. The digging went smoothly. The soil was firm but not stubborn, layers of clay and loam packed tight over the decades. We shaved down with the backhoe, then switched to spades as we neared the vault. You don't risk heavy machinery once you're close. It's all handwork, steady and deliberate. The vault came into view, concrete, weathered but intact. No cracks, no intrusion from roots. We brought the straps down, lifted the lid, and exposed the coffin. Darkened wood, water-stained edges, but nothing out of the ordinary. We hoisted it up onto timbers, laid it flat, and cleaned it for opening. Everyone stood back as we cracked the rusted clasps and eased the lid open. The smell came first, as it always does. That mix of earth, damp, and the sweet, chemical trace of embalming fluid, lingering after all those years. Inside lay what we expected. Skeletal remains dressed in the faint tatters of burial clothes. The work of time was evident. But that wasn't what drew us in. At her chest, laid across folded hands, was a bouquet of roses, not dried, not rotted, not reduced to brown husks, like you'd expect after decades in the ground. They were red, vivid, as if they had been placed yesterday. The petals were full, the stems intact, the leaves still carrying the green of life. Even the ribbon that bound them looked fresh, its color not faded by time or moisture. For a long moment, none of us spoke. Every man on that crew had seen flowers in coffins before. They always crumble. They darken, turn brittle, and vanish to dust. That's what happens. That's what always happens. But here they were, bright as the day they'd been lowered into the earth. The officer overseeing the exhumation ordered photographs. Flashbulbs lit the inside of the coffin, capturing the strange image, skeletal remains holding fresh roses. When the documentation was done, I reached forward with gloved hands to gently lift the bouquet. The moment the air touched them, the truth revealed itself. The petals, firm and red seconds before, collapsed into dust at my touch. The stems withered in an instant. The ribbon frayed and snapped. Within moments, nothing was left but a fine, dry residue scattered across the woman's chest. The crew stood silent. What had looked eternal had lasted only in the stillness of the sealed coffin. The moment it met the living world again, it disintegrated into what time had always meant it to be. There's no magic in this work, only science, soil, and the patience of years. I've seen odd things explained by chemistry, metal from vaults leaching into wood, embalming fluids preserving tissue in strange ways, even pockets of air that alter decay. It's possible the airtight seal of that coffin, combined with embalming chemicals, created a microenvironment where those flowers were preserved, suspended in time. But explanations don't change what it feels like to see them. Because when you're standing there, the effect is undeniable. Life where there should only be death, color where there should only be gray, a symbol of love surviving decades untouched. And then, in the span of seconds, gone to dust before your eyes. When we told the family, they wept. Some said it was a sign of love, that the grandmother had been holding on to those flowers until she was brought closer to them. Others said it was simply a mystery meant to remain with her. They asked if anything could be saved. But there was nothing left to save. The roses had lived only in the silence of the grave. Once disturbed, they surrendered to time, I've carried that image with me ever since. A coffin opened to reveal roses as red as blood, only to see them vanish in seconds. It wasn't frightening, it wasn't supernatural. It was something heavier, an intimate reminder of how love, memory, and the objects we bury carry weight that science can't fully measure. For me, it became a lesson. Cemeteries aren't just about death. They're about preservation, not just of bodies, but of stories, tokens, symbols of love that families thought important enough to send underground. That day, the earth gave back, not just bones, but a fleeting vision of love untouched by time. And it reminded me that what we bury isn't always gone. It just waits, silently, until it's ready to return, if only for a breath. Thank you all for joining me on these journeys. Your support means everything, and I love reading your reactions and personal experiences in the comments. If these stories kept you on the edge of your seat or gave you chills, please hit that like button and consider subscribing for more haunting stories. Have you ever experienced something similar?
Hey there, are you sitting down? Good, because Wayfair's end of season sale is here and you can shop it from your couch. It's Wayfair's Labor Day clearance and it's on now. Right now, you can score up to 70% off everything home at Wayfair, like up to 50% off outdoor furniture and decor, and up to 70% off area rugs, plus amazing doorbuster deals and 24-hour surprise flash deals on Wayfair home finds in every style. And get it all with fast shipping on everything right to your door. From furniture to faucets, this is your last chance of the season to score huge deals at Wayfair. Don't let the final days of summer pass you by without shopping these end-of-season savings. So don't wait. Like summer, these savings won't last. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 70% off everything home. Celebrate your holiday weekend with can't-miss savings before they run out. Shop Wayfair's Labor Day clearance now through September 2nd at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Perhaps you have your own unexplainable story to share? I'd love to hear your thoughts in the comments below. Each of your stories adds another layer to our growing community of horror enthusiasts. And if you think someone else might enjoy a good scare, don't forget to share this video with them. Stay tuned for more spine-chilling stories, and remember, sometimes the scariest tales are the ones that could happen to any of us. Thank you again for watching, and I'll see you in the next video, if you dare.